Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Sean. Sean, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, how's it going? My name is Sean Young. I am a man of many hats. I do a lot of different things. Primarily, I am a survivor of just about every single form of trauma that you can think. I am a U.S. Army veteran, as well as a podcaster. In a short, brief summary.
Well, I'm excited to have you here today for you to share your story. How would you describe survival mode?
Survival mode to me is not living, not thriving. You're pretty much just existing. You're living the motions, but you're not actually getting anything from it. You're more tormented. And I've lived in survival mode a lot. And you're just surviving. You're trying to make it to the next day.
Yeah, I would say I'm a VIP in survival mode.
You got the car valeted in there.
Everything. T-shirt, magnet, bumper sticker.
The nice little cup.
Exactly. You got it. You know it. So tell us your story to and through survival mode.
Oh, goodness. I've been in every form of trauma that you can think about, just about. It all started when I was a kid. I had some pretty traumatic events happen with my father, with abuse and neglect. I was taken away from my parents when I was 4 years old and put in foster care. And eventually was adopted by my grandparents. And I was then raised in a strict religious household. So there's a whole set of expectations on you as a child, as a man. I mean, I wasn't even a man yet. And through time and work, my dad, my abuser, got custody of me. And I ended up moving up with him. And he's a very angry human being, like still to this day is. And so he took his focus away from the things that he used to do, so like drinking and drugs and all that, and put it on me. And I had a tremendous amount of weight put on my shoulders as a 10-year-old. And essentially, from the age of 10 till about 17, I was beat almost every day whenever he was home. And that created a lot of distrust for adults, and it created a lot of distrust in myself. I questioned myself, and I didn't know what love was because I didn't have that parental love to understand what love actually was. So I joined the US Army at the age of 17. On my 18th birthday was my first day in basic training. So I went straight from a child to an adult, and right into the man's world, I guess you would say. And from that point forward, I was deployed 4 times to Afghanistan, witnessed many traumatic experiences when I was deployed. One of the worst being the death of my best friend overseas, and that really traumatized me for 10 years. And in that time, I didn't, on top of the trauma from my childhood and then some of those other ones, like that was just the icing on the cake for the better part of 10 years. And 2018, I said I had enough. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I said, fuck life. And I had a suicide attempt. And in that time, I made up every reason why I didn't want to be alive, and I couldn't find a reason to be alive. And then when I woke up in the hospital, life kept going, and it got worse and it got harder. Hi, youngin. And so it just wasn't it wasn't it life didn't work out for me. And so I ended up transitioning out of the military. I was medically retired for traumatic brain injury, essentially just a lot of concussions. And I found no purpose in life. I lost the purpose that I had when I was in the military. I lost the purpose of being a father. I am a father, but I couldn't see it. I lost the purpose, and I really didn't understand like how to survive outside of the military because I had a structured environment, and then I went to a completely unstructured, chaotic machine. And so I dived deep into my addiction. I was an alcoholic for a better part of my whole adult life. And I woke up in jail one day and I said, something's got to change. And I took a lot of time for that change. When I say it took a lot of time, I mean like I'm still working on myself 5 years later, almost 6 years later. But in the beginning, I was just nose deep in everything, nose to the grindstone, if you will. And I addressed my alcoholism. I addressed my mental health disorders. I addressed my traumatic experiences in a way that a lot of people are like, I don't understand how you could do that. And essentially, like I looked at it in the face. I repeated the scenarios every single day until it didn't hurt anymore. And it was kind of like a way to grind the gears and feel the pain, right? Because like most human beings, we want to run away from the pain. But for me, I sat in it and I dwelled in it and I didn't let it consume me, but I felt the feelings around it. And so for me, one of the things that I ran away from in my survival mode was alcohol, right? Like alcohol, women, you name it, I ran to it as a safety net. And I just kept going, just kept doing that. And for once in my life, I didn't have anything to run to. I just had to sit. And so I just sat in the discomfort and I sat in the pain and I sat in all of it. And I still do. To this day, I mean, I'm sober 5 years, but it doesn't make any life situation any easier. It just gives me tools to handle it. And I've been married 3 times, and some of the most painful experiences came from that. And I lived in survival in the breakups. And up until very recently, I actually was really in survival mode in relationships too. Because I would bring trauma from one relationship into the next one, and we trauma bonded. And then I would do the same thing into the next one, and we trauma bond to the point where there was just this like massive ball of trauma that I was like holding. And it didn't help me, and it didn't help the partner that I was with at all. And so this last relationship, I really focused on fixing myself, right? And like just displaying what a healthy relationship, what I feel a healthy relationship would be like, without the trauma bond, without any of it. And it bit me in the ass really hard. And it after I broke up with the my last ex, ex-girlfriend, not wife. but when I broke up with her, I didn't run to anybody. I didn't run to anything. I dove deep into my spiritualism. I dove deep into my child. I dove deep into healing me. That part of me that was that I felt was destroyed in that relationship, I dove deep into. And I didn't project any feelings of hate, which I normally would have. I didn't project any feelings of disgrace. I maintained my sobriety through it in one of the hardest times. And it has been beautiful because I've been able to do things that I never have done before. I plant plants and it's just beautiful. I'm literally looking out the window at a rose that I planted and it's beautiful. And so survival mode for me really has been my whole life. And I feel it in my body. I think a lot of people understand that the mental anguish we go through is translated through the body. I feel it in my body every day. And I try to do everything that I can to mitigate it. But survival mode was hard for me because like it was like I was living in a box, right? Like I'm living in this box of trauma, mental health disorders, addiction, and like everywhere I turn, there's no door. There's no door for me to leave. And so I really had to address these things head on. And recently I reached out to my father because him and I, you know, stopped talking a while ago, and I went to extend the olive branch and he didn't want it. And so that was another form of trauma, right? That was the neglect, the inner child for me saying, "Hey, I just want your love and approval." And he said, "No, I'm not giving it to you." So that, you know, that really did hurt too. But that's the abbreviated version of my story. I could go into much more detail about many different things, but we'd be here for a few hours.
I understand. And first of all, just let me say I celebrate your 5 years of sobriety. As someone who has loved an addict, I know what that journey looks like and how difficult it is to stay focused day on day, right? Like our human experience is we either run away from pain or run towards pleasure, right? And some of us get caught in that loop where we can't regulate how far we'll run to escape the pain. And I think with most addicts, it's escaping pain, it's not pleasure seeking. It's just, I want to numb and silence my trauma, all of this stuff that I have going on. Did you participate in a step program, or what did it look like for you to recover?
So when I first started my journey, obviously I had some charges under my belt. And so there's a program in the United States that's relatively new, and it's a veterans therapeutic court. So they find veterans that have offenses that are not terrible, but are bad enough to acquire, like a felony or misdemeanor. And so they bring us in and they enroll us into treatment. I started with 12-step program, you know, AA. I went to AA for a while, and I did a program that was called Moral Reclamation Therapy. It's another 12-step program, but it forces you to look at all the bad decisions you made in your life and take accountability for them. And that was hard. That for me, I have always been that person that's like, you're the problem, not me. And that's the addict brain speaking. And so I did that, and I did a ton of therapy. I was in two different individual therapies, a bunch of group therapies. And I also did an anger group. I did the anger group because when I was in the army, they thrive on anger and they say, get angry for everything that you're doing. And I was taught that anger was a great motivation, but I was never taught how to turn it off. And then I was always deemed broken because I was perpetually angry. And when I got to this point of like, I hate how angry I am, I need to understand why I'm this angry. I found out that anger's not bad, but it's a stepping stone to figure out what emotions lie underneath that, right? And it's like peeling back the layer, like Shrek, right? Just peeling that layer, the layers of that onion back, and really getting to the core of why I feel the way that I do. And most times for me, it's I'm either upset or I'm scared. And so anger is really not the ultimate ending. It's there's something underneath it. So yeah, I did a ton of that. And once I had re acquired some time in recovery, I started giving back to the community. I got peer support certified. So I started doing that. I opened up my podcast. So I started doing that and like really giving back to the community, giving people a space to share their story, their experience, not just with addiction, but with mental health disorders too. And it's a beautiful thing. I've learned so much from the people that have been on the show and the people that I've worked with.
I think this 12-step programs, while they may vary, what I respect about them is that accountability, right? Like there is a step where you have to go and make amends if it's safe for you to do so, if it's and really working through what created the pain, the need to run away. So prolific in your life. And, you know, a huge aspect of what I've seen, I've always stood on the sidelines, but observed one of the reasons why, and I've talked about this before, one of the reasons why I actually focus on storytelling is what I witnessed in the rooms supporting someone else. And just the power and the power in sharing our stories allows us to connect beyond all emotion, beyond culture, beyond societal expectation. It really just gets to the core. And the reason why so many of us suffer for so long is because we have this belief that no one will understand why I'm the way I am. How? I don't even understand why I am the way that I am. So we often suffer in silence, right? So that's one of the reasons this podcast is not just a whole bunch of experts coming on to teach us how to get past the residual impact of our trauma, but really people talking about it. And like, I love what you said about anger as someone who also was a very prolific angry person. I mean, anything could set me off while I was in survival mode. And like getting to the core of that actually changed. It allowed me to process the pain that I was masking with that big emotion at every opportunity because now I have an awareness of it. And when I talk about accident survival mode, I always say that there are three phases. The first is self-awareness. We can change what we can't see. And oftentimes we are living these trauma responses, right? Like, you grew up in an angry home. You would be expected to be angry. But then that is compounded by your time in the army. You know, I don't know what your reaction was to being in a highly religious home. I don't know, you know, because some people they rebel against that as well, right? Like they don't want to be controlled. And so we, as we grow, as we experience new things, there are without tools, what is expected for us to just continue doing what we know.
Yeah, absolutely. So with the anger, I've talked a lot to a lot of people about about the angry side of me and like what it used to look like back then. And I'm a huge fan of Marvel, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And there's a scene in the first one where at the end of the movie, Bruce Banner is walking toward the fight. And I think Captain America said, "Hey, Bruce, you got to get angry." And he looked at him and he said, "Well, funny thing is, I'm always angry." And he turned into the Hulk. That's me. That was me. I was always angry. And it was just like a split second. It took me a split second to like lose my mind and flip the switch. And that anger took me to places that I do not like to be at. And we're talking like not just the physical altercations with people, but we're talking about like the visualization of violent acts, right? Like, I've been in situations where I've looked at somebody and I'm like, is this reality or is this like just my thought pattern? And it scared the shit out of me. I didn't want to be that person, right? I didn't. I mean, veterans to a degree, we get a bad name because we're battle tested. We've seen some shit, and you have some veterans who've committed some very heinous crimes. And I didn't want to be that guy. I didn't want to be that one that was on the news that, hey, look, He did something and he disgraced his service and he disgraced his family. I don't want to be that. And I'm glad that I got the help that I got because that anger was way out of control.
But speaking about the veteran aspect of your story, and you were discharged for the medical issues. Was there a process during your discharge, or you were just lucky?
There was, I had been under medical evaluation at that point up to a year, where I was in the clinic or in the hospital almost every day for at least 6 hours, doing different therapies, getting MRIs on my brain, all that stuff. And it just got to a point where the army said, "Hey, look, we can't use you anymore. You're broken." And so there was a stream pipeline where I went to civilian doctors for them to do evaluations on me. And then I had to turn in all my equipment and sign over certain things when I was in the army. But as far as like a transition out, like an official, like, "Hey, you're out." No, it was very much, "Hey, they said that, your orders say that February 4th, 2019 is your last day in the army. February 5th is the day that they said, okay, you're no longer a part of this organization." That hurt. And they don't teach you how to succeed. They don't teach you, they don't teach about what happens when things go wrong. They don't teach you about the money management aspect. It's kind of just expected of you. And that wake up call was hard, very hard for me.
It's interesting that you say that because, I think in life, and I'm not American. I have not really been around veterans in that aspect. But what I do hear is that people leave the army very angry, and a lot of them are suffering with mental illnesses that are either undiagnosed or untreated. And I just wondered, since it's so prolific, why is there no pathway out? Because, similar to we hear all the time, you have to love yourself more, right? You gotta love yourself. No one's teaching us how to love ourselves. They taught you for years to channel your anger, to hold on to that. But then you're not taught the opposite of that, and to get back to normal. And I just it seems so prolific for so long, because we've been hearing from the 70s where people were coming back and getting hooked on heroin because they had nothing else. I don't understand why at this stage there's nothing that supports that exit.
It's because it's a machine. These issues didn't exist during World War II. I've talked to World War II veterans and they're like, "Yeah, I've never dealt with like PTSD. We were just kind of we were kind of expected to man up, shut up, and we did." And then you get to and I'm not taking anything away from World War II veterans. I've very much said like I would never want to fight in World War II. That's just a fight that I wouldn't want. And some of the experiences that they went through are something that like no human being should have to see. But then you get into Vietnam where it was more of the enlightened era. Like you had the birth of the 60s and the hippie movement and stuff like that, which is nothing wrong with that spiritual movement. Well, nothing wrong with that. But then you had a lot of people that were, they were coming back from a war zone, coming home to be called baby killers and to be called all these just horrible names and treated terrible in society. And then, the machine rolls on into, where we are now. And one thing that I find is that you're a number. You're just a number, you're a social security number, you are a face. And then once you exit out of service, you're no longer accountable. They don't need to account for you, so they kind of move on. And yeah, you're not taught how to turn that off. You're not taught anything. So that's why like the suicide rate is so high amongst veterans. And that's why the criminal rate is so high amongst veterans. But also on a better note, on a better side, the recidivism rate for veterans is extremely low. Where veterans they'll offend, they'll do, have criminal offenses, and then they'll enter into a recovery program. Where they'll do their time through probation or whatever, and then they never reoffend. And so, that's really good because they're getting, we're getting tools, we're getting skills to use to properly where we're not a detriment to society. And I think that's one of the big things is we don't want to feel like a detriment to society, but we make ourselves a detriment to society. And so, like, when I went through my program and I was in Veterans Treatment Court, I wanted to give back to my community. And I ended up working hand in hand with the justice system up in Alaska, where I lived. And I work hand in hand with a sister county here, hand in hand with them. I'm a mentor for some of the participants in Veterans Court because I've been there. And it's a beautiful thing because I went through it and I get to see people go through it. And I get to see the change, the shift. And sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. I think it's great that you're giving back. And I think, a huge part of the healing journey is just that, like being able to lend a hand. I don't have to be your therapist, right? Like, but being like representation, in my opinion, is like, oh, so key. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't come in and help a veteran. I mean, I probably could if I had the tools, right? But like, I think it is more impactful another veteran who really understands like the intricacies and understands what it looks like, because I don't care how much we learn in books, lived experience trumps a lot.
It really does.
And so I celebrate you again for, holding your hand back to help others, because I feel like, that is a huge part of our healing journey for anybody, not just veterans, not just people who were addicts, like anybody who has overcome anything. It could be like, listen, I was starving. I spent 6 months of my life in starvation. And then, you go out and you're feeding the hungry, even if it's just one person a day. We as humans are here to make a change. And oftentimes, our own experience creates a pathway for that to happen if we're open to it.
Absolutely. I have a veteran that I'm working with, I've been working with for a while. And one of the most beautiful transformations happened right in front of my eyes. And he hadn't been enrolled into the program yet. He was coming in. He was angry. He's in his 50s and he's going through some cancer. He has cancer. And he came in and he was really angry. He wasn't assigned a mentor or whatever. And he was just angry and he was getting loud with the judge. And I stood up and I walked next to him and I said, "Hey, brother, you're not alone. You don't have to be alone. You don't have to ever feel alone. I've been there. Exactly where you are." Because he was in the jumpsuit. Said, "I've been exactly where you are, right? Like, I felt the shame. I felt all of it. You don't have to feel this anymore." And he looked at me and teared up. And that's all he needed to hear was that he wasn't alone. And from that point forward, I've stood next to him every time he's gone into court, and I've helped him out move out of a very bad neighborhood into a sober living facility. And I didn't help him. I'm just the dude that's walking next to him, right? And he's the one making the decisions that he's making. So, I mean, it's a beautiful thing when you see a small shift in somebody, and then that small shift like cascades into these massive shifts. And I can't be more proud of the veterans I work with. They're awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't take a whole lot to make a change, right? And that is what is key. There's small shifts that happen create mountains of change, in the long term. And that's why it's important to have support at every step. I think community is something that we tend to avoid when we're in the mix of things, but community is what really helps us in the end, right? And sometimes it's hard to see that because of the shame and the guilt and all of these other negative emotions and narratives that we carry. It almost tells us, it's almost like our subconscious is telling us to isolate so it can do even more damage. And as we see in trauma recovery and addiction recovery, it is those communities that are built, people really recognizing that they are not alone, that they aren't siloed or, some exception to the rule, that like someone else has gone down this, someone else has journeyed this, someone else has figured out how to carry it a little different so it doesn't feel like they're carrying the full weight of the world on the back. And it is a huge part of healing. It's just navigating the weight a little different, because you don't put on the weight of being raised and abused by your father almost every day until you went into the army. Like, that isn't a weight that you just throw away. But learning how to navigate that and having the tools to deal with the residual impacts is why your life has been able to change.
Absolutely. And you spoke about community and stuff. And before we hit record, you were talking about, how men will share their feelings and their emotions. I can't tell you how many times on social media I've seen men pouring out their souls and like really digging into how they feel, but they're stuck. They're just so stuck in that feeling and they don't feel the way out. And I send my number and I'm like, look, I know I'm just a dude. I'm just a guy, a face behind a camera, right? Like I do work on TikTok. I'm like, I know I'm just a dude behind a camera, and he makes some funny videos from time to time, and he talks about his feelings from time to time. But I'm here. Here's my number. Three people have reached out, which, I mean, hey, it's the act for me, it's the act of putting that lifeline out there for somebody to pick up and take hold of. And other people just don't get past that. Some people do. Some people find out and they work their own magic, and I'm glad for them. But I'm always that person that is there for other people. I'll pick up my phone at 3 a.m. I don't care. Just so that other people feel like they're not alone and that they're not going through the shit by themselves.
And I respect her heartily. And I'm similar. I am that friend that I don't care what time of day it is, you call me. You call me. Or I've had situations, I used to work in London. I would meet people on the tube. And I had an incident once where I smiled at this woman. I'm not English. I'm originally from Bermuda, right? So smiling is normal to me. It's foreign in London, though.
Yeah,
And I got on the tube one day, and I smiled at this woman. I could feel her energy was so heavy. And she came over and she poured out her heart to me. And then we end up exchanging Facebooks. And this is now, has to be 9 years later. She still reaches out and tells me thank you for that smile. People just want to be seen, just and understood beyond anything else, accepted.
absolutely. Speaking of London, I got to spend a day in London, and I will say it's a different culture over there, different way of life. I was walking through Hyde Park, and I got to see like families interacting with each other, and it was the most beautiful thing. No phones out, no nothing. Dogs were off the leash. Like it just blew me away because it's not a culture I'm used to here. I'm used to families like, oh yeah, Johnny, go on, have fun. And parents are actually interacting with their children, and people are having a good time. And I would love to come back to London just to visit and like walk around some more.
Yeah. Sean, I have really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
Yeah. Tell us how we can connect with you online.
Oh goodness, I'm everywhere. Facebook, Sean Young. Spelled at the bottom there. I'm the dude with the big beard. So that's one way. I mean, but if you look up Sean Young on like a Google search, you're going to find the female actor Sean Young. So you're not going to find me on Instagram, TikTok. I am the Sober Shaman Sean. It's a tongue twister. But my podcast, you can find me online or on YouTube or wherever you get your podcast, Recover Out Loud podcast. And it's an orange and blue logo. I decided to take my face off of it because it's not about me, it's about my guests. So, yeah, that's where you can find me, and I'm always responsive.
Okay, I'll make sure all of that detail is in the show notes. So before we wrap it all up, one key takeaway the listeners can action.
One key takeaway. Don't take it personal. Don't take anything personal. It's not about you. It's very rarely about you. Sometimes it's about you, but not, it's not always about you. So don't take it personal.
Yeah. That's one of the four agreements, I believe. Yeah. So, listeners, thank you for catching another episode of Survival Made Disrupted. Sean, thank you so much for this conversation. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, but you damn sure were not built to just survive. So, disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open on purpose, because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison mask as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken. You're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it. Don't numb it. Move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.